All righty. Good afternoon. My name is still George. I'm still an alcoholic. And this session, we're on steps 5, 6, and 7, three of my favorites. Before I got to step 5, I had written an extensive 4-step. There was no doubt in my mind that I was thorough. There was a lot of anticipation of doing the 5th step. I was really looking forward to it. There were a few parts in it that I knew I was going to be a little awkward talking about, but for the most part, I was ready. And also, just one last thing about the 4th step. It was the only thing in my life that I ever completed. You know, you build a model plane. When I was a kid, I'd have parts left over. I never read a whole book from cover to cover. But the 4th step was the only thing in my life that I ever completed. I've completed since then, but up until then, that was it. So that was like a real trophy for me. So the 5th step, my sponsor and I both worked a lot of hours, and we decided that we would block out 2 or 3 days, and we would do a marathon session. So I met him at his house on a Sunday night about 4 in the afternoon, 5 in the afternoon. We had something to eat, and then we started the 5th step. And before I tell you the mechanics of doing it, he said, George, everything, he's a very bright guy. He said, everything on this planet has the ability to cleanse itself, and your soul is no different. And that's what we're going to be doing here. And he said, God forbid that you ever had a CAT scan and they found a spot on your kidney or your liver or your lung. Would you want the surgeon to take out half the spot, the whole spot, or the whole spot and then some? And I said, well, man, I want the whole spot and then some. And he said, well, that's what we want in this 5th step. I want everything that you've written. And when we're done, if there's anything else that you want to talk about, now is the time to do that. I want you to be able to walk through this arch free at last. So that was the attitude that I had. And then we were in this nice den reading area, and we got on our knees. We said the 3rd step prayer. We got up, and he told me some pretty private, personal things about himself, which opened the door for me. And then he said, let's do it. So I'm sitting there. I got my notebook stacked up in front of me, and I opened up notebook number 1, and I started reading my 4th step. He sat there. He didn't fall asleep. He didn't answer the phone. He took a couple of notes because he wanted to talk to me about things, but he just sat there. I was blown away that he would be that attentive. I started, like I said, I think 5 or 6 at night. We went till 10 o'clock at night, and then that was it for the night, and then we started again about 8 o'clock in the morning, and my 5th step was about an 18-hour ordeal, and there were times that I got choked up about things, and he gave me time to compose myself. And there were times when I thought he was going to run out the door, and he didn't do anything, you know. So what I thought was really bad, he didn't even phase, and things that I thought were nothing, he was like, Jesus, you're an unguided missile, you know. So it was, that's the way it went, you know. And I also would like to say that the 5th step was an epic event in my life. And I don't use that word lightly. Epic is something unusually large or grand. In my little world, my 5th step was an epic event. It was, and never had I done anything like this. I actually did 2 5th steps. The first one was seeing a priest for about a half hour, 45 minutes. But most of that was my sexual behavior. But this is years later when I get into this process. So it was an epic event. It was life-changing. And when I got through reading my resentments, he said, are you ready to read your fears? And I read those. And I was afraid to say that I was afraid. So to admit to my sponsor some of the things that I was afraid of was really not easy, you know. And then to go through the sexual list was really embarrassing, a couple of things that were really embarrassing. But that's the way it was. When I got through, he said to me, is there anything else that you'd like to talk? Oh, I got to the last page. I flipped the last page and it was blank. And he said, did you write an ideal for a normal sex life, which I did. He asked me to read that. And he said, is there anything else? And I says, no, that's about it. And he said, are you absolutely sure? Is there anything else you want to talk about? And I said, well, there are a couple other things. And he said, what's that? And I might get a little choked up here. So we were competitors in the same town. We were both in the restaurant business. And incidentally, he's still in the restaurant business. I'm not. So I had resentments against him on the way he ran his business. So here was a person that was a mentor and became like my big brother. And now I got to tell him what I like about his business. And we had a few laughs, you know, and then he said, is there anything else? And I said, no, that's it. And he stood up and he gave me a standing ovation and he said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. He was not discounting the 2 or 3 years that I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was welcoming the new man. He was welcoming the person that was reborn. And that's what I felt like. I was, my back was sore, I had a headache, but I felt completely clean. I there was nothing left in me. It was that thorough, you know. And so then I remember it says, you know, we take the book down from our shelves, and he said, actually I've heard Fifth Steps as well, and I try to do marathon sessions when possible, but sometimes they have to be done over a series of days, and I don't know if you've done yours, whether how you feel about that, but I felt that if I could do marathon sessions, it's a little bit more of a ceremony to it, you know, to come in one day and stay a couple of days and leave, it's just, I don't know, something better about it. Although I have done ones that lasted for 2 or 3 weeks with people that I sponsor because of scheduling and whatever. So anyway, and to hear a fifth step is a great reward. To be asked to be present when a person sheds a lifetime resentments, reveals their deepest fears, and casts light on their darkest sexual past are moments that I'll never forget, and it was an honor to be asked to hear them. anyway, so the fifth step to me was a turning point in my life. It says in the book, we get home, we take the book down for our shelf. I was going to be a guest in this house for another day. And he said, are you going to do steps 6 and 7? And I said, yes, I am. And he says, well, you've been coming long enough. You know what you have to do. And he said, I'll leave you alone for well over an hour. So he left the house at about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. He has 4 restaurants. So he went to one of his restaurants and so I don't want to mess this up, so I put the book up on the shelf just so I could take it down. And, so I'm kneeling down at this coffee table, and I've got my notebook stacked up in front of me, and I read the first 5 proposals, the first 5 steps. And when the hour was up, I asked God if he was willing, and I was willing if he was ready, that he would remove these defects of character that had been blocking me off from the sunlight of the Spirit, and it also created a lot of hardship in my life and people in my family's life. So when the hour was up, I read the 7-step prayer, and it says, we have then completed step 6 and 7. My understanding of step 6 and 7 has taken many different meanings as time has gone on. But I got up the next morning, I'm still a guest at his house, he's a bachelor. And I remember taking a shower the next morning, and I'm having breakfast with him, and I says, Bobby, I know what the word clean really feels like. And he said, if you continue to practice steps 8, 9, 10, and 11, and 12, you can maintain this condition for the rest of your life. And I never forgot that. So character defects, you know. What is character? Well, you know, you're in the drop-down box of your pages or Microsoft Word, you see all these little different letters. Well, those are fonts, those are characters, but they're not talking about that kind of character. And then there are people, that actors and actresses, that play different characters on the stage. They're not talking about that kind of character. And then there's odd or unusual people, like Pee Wee Herman. Now that guy's a character. But they're not talking about that kind of character. They're talking about the character in ourselves that is the ability to do and say the right thing over a variety of different situations. And my character was flawed or had defects. A defect is an imperfection, a blemish, or a flaw. My character, I had flaws in my character which prevented me from doing the right thing. And hopefully this prayer was the start of a new life. It was a rebirth. I also like to say that even though they're two short paragraphs, they impact us for a lifetime. This point in the step is the halfway point, and it's beginning of a metamorphosis. I'll give you an example of a couple of metamorphoses that happen in Mother Nature. It's where the tadpole's swimming around in the pond, but one day he drops his tail and develops arms and legs that are webbed, and he can live on the land as well as the water. That's a metamorphosis. Or perhaps the caterpillar that crawls around in the leaf thinking that's all there is to life, and then one day sprouts wings and becomes the butterfly. That's a metamorphosis. So there was a metamorphosis in my life at this point of the steps. The metamorphosis would be in the fourth step, we over and over, the selfishness, the dishonesty, the resentment and fear that Bill Wilson was able to condense very complex psychological conditions into those four subcategories. So for me, the metamorphosis was the selfishness hopefully has metamorphosed into becoming a giver. The self-seeking behavior has metamorphosed into becoming somebody with humility. The dishonesty hopefully has metamorphosed into somebody with integrity. And the fear, now I hopefully have developed some courage to face my fears. So that's the metamorphosis that took place when I had this incredible cleansing. This is what started to take place. I'll give you an example of a situation that came up and how I would have acted before I did this work and after, right? So I'm driving down 128 a while ago, stop and go traffic, and you know the traffic's going along pretty well, and then it comes to a stop. You know, we've all been in that situation. So I'm coming to a stop, and I look in the rearview mirror, and this car is not stopping. This person's on their cell phone, and wham, I get rear-ended. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I get rear-ended, I hit the car in front of me, and the next car hits the next car. There's like 3 cars involved. Nobody's hurt, but a lot of damage, right? So we're pulled over the side of the road, traffic's backed up, right? So I can still drive my car. Can't believe it. Front end is backed up, front end's bent up, the back end's, but I can drive. So I take the car to the body shop. Some guy comes out with his clipboard, and he goes, wow, I got in an accident. So he's looking, he goes, hey, you need a hood, you need 2 fenders, and we need a bumper, and in the back we need a trunk, 2 quarter panels. And I said, okay. He said, it'll be $6,500. I said, well, I have insurance, so, you know, fix it. He goes, you know, I was looking at your car. I noticed you got just this little scratch on the door on the right side. He says, what I'll do is I'll paint the car, and I'll just add that to the bill. I said, yeah, but that scratch has got nothing to do with this accident. He goes, look, we got plenty of wiggle room in this job. We'll just add a few bucks. Nobody's going to know anything, and the car's going to look great. I says, no, we're not going to do that. And he looks at me, and he says, you know, I've been doing this job for a long time. I've never had anybody refuse that offer. And I'm not looking for a pat on the back. I'm just talking about if my old drinking days, I would have said, listen, let's paint the whole car, you know. And that's the kind of thing that happened to me as I went through this process. I think character is what it's all about, you know. I think one of the reasons that we see so many miracles in people's lives, they obviously stop drinking. That's so completely understood, no explanation is necessary. But our character improves. And when our character improves, doors of opportunity open. Quality people come into our lives. And that's why I think we see so many miracles in people's lives that are in recovery, especially this kind of recovery. And it's all about character. I think the great writer James Allen said that our thoughts equal our character, and our character determines our destiny. And to me, that's what this is all about. My sponsor always says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a paradox. He goes, it's got everything to do with not drinking, but really nothing to do with not drinking. It has nothing to do with not drinking, but everything to do with not drinking. He says, George, your role is to go through this process, to have a spiritual awakening with your Creator, and to carry this message to other people, and for the rest of your life, try to practice impeccable character. And that's what this is all about to me. And it started with the fifth step, that cleansing, and then after that, the step 6 and 7, which is where my life really, really started to change. And that's my experience with these 3 steps. All right.
So hi, I'm Miriam, an alcoholic. And so I have to preface that I entered the fifth step not clearly from a place of authenticity. I entered it because I was finishing up graduate school and there was a disconnect, right? I was finishing up a degree and I wanted to be authentic. And I couldn't be authentic until I finished this process. For some reason, there was this hold on me. So I was going to graduate in May, and I needed to finish up the writing. So I was like, the pedal to the metal to finish up. And my sponsor was so gracious, absolutely gracious. So I called her and I said, I finished my ideal. And she said, okay then, I'll meet you, this was probably on a Friday, she said, I'll meet you in West Newbury, and we'll start. Because this is a life and death errand, right? And she modeled for me what it was like to be a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, what altruism was, and not to give things lip service, because I was great at lip service. And she probably knew that about me, you know? And so she would say something and follow up with action. So she said, bring your book, and we're going to read, because you have to read how it works, or not how it works, what's the next chapter? Into action, thank you. And so we read it, and I understood thoroughly why a self-appraisal wasn't enough, that I had to admit to God, to myself, and another human being. She said, Mary, I am just the witness, which is so great today, you know. I don't have to be anything but a witness. And what a gift to be a witness. And what a gift it was for me. So we're upstairs in the pastor's office at the Congregational Church. And so she rearranged the furniture a little bit, right? And she said, you sit in the pastor's seat. So I sat in the pastor's seat. And she said, we're going to have this chair for God. She said, it's probably a building code, so we're not going to light a candle. But I would light a candle ordinarily. I said, okay. And then she said, we only have an hour. But this is good for you to just, you know. She said, all I want you to do is read what you wrote. And so we began. She had a timer. And she gave me good eye contact. And I just began to read. And then at the end of the hour, she got out her day timer and she said, next Saturday. I said, really, next Saturday? And she said, yep, I want you at my house at 9 a.m. And she said, and, you know, don't make any plans. I said, we're not going to read for an hour? She said, no, we're not. We're going to just put the whole day aside. So Saturday morning I woke up and I said to my husband, you know, I don't know how long it's going to be. Now, we have four small children, and, you know, we weren't the type of family that went out to restaurants at all. But this is how my husband's mind works. He gets out the Atlantis map. And he said, okay, you're going over here, and we are here, and I think we should meet here for dinner. I'll bring the children. Now, this is such a big deal, right? He's going to bring the children, and we're going to meet at the restaurant on 114. And he said, you're probably going to need protein. We'll go to the steakhouse. So, like, a miracle in my life is happening this Saturday morning, right? That this man has this much compassion for me. And in my mind, he just wasn't on board. He didn't realize what I was going through. But when in all reality, he knew what that blue notebook was all about, right? He knew I was going to meetings. He could see this change in me, and I had no idea. I would have told you he was this when in fact he was that. And it was incredible. And the more I think about it, like I don't share this, I don't even think about it until I'm talking about my fifth step. That how much he was involved in this process. And who knows if he was, you know, part of that prayer warrior, you know, camp. And so I kissed him and off I went, and I was there at 9 o'clock sharp. She was kind of militant about that, you know, being on time. And I'm always like 5 minutes late. But I was there, and I met her daughters, and her daughters greeted me, and she hugged them, and she said, okay, so you're going to be with Grammy now. And off they went. I never saw them again. And she made a cup of tea for me, and she said, you can sit wherever you want. She lit a candle. She put the beautiful chair for God. And at this point, I was—I knew where I was in the writing, and I, even though she checked my writing, I was still so full of shame that I said to her, can I sit at your feet? Because I don't think I can look at you. And she said, Mary, you can sit wherever you want, wherever you're comfortable. I can hear you. So I sat at her feet. And, you know, when I wrote the causes and effects and when I wrote the turnarounds, there was no emotion of tears. It was just, I was angry and had the juice of the causes and effects. And then I was kind of like, oh, like there was devastation when I did the turnarounds. But when I read it, and she had strategically placed the tissue box right next to me. So as I began to read, it was incredible how I began to cry. And all the wounds that I had been carrying began to be soothed with the tears. It was almost like a balm. And, no one prepares you for that kind of experience. I couldn't even imagine in 1,000 years that that's what would have happened to me. But that was my experience. And I read the last one, read my ideal, and I think I took one break. I mean, it was a 6-hour run. We took one break. And like George, when I finished and I closed the book, I stood up and she embraced me and she said, welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she too said, you know, you're a brand new person. You're not the girl that arrived at 9 o'clock this morning because you have read it all. You admitted to God and to yourself and to the witness the exact nature of your wrongs. All the self-reliance, all the fear, all the maladaptive thinking that had controlled my life. It was incredible. It was really incredible. And, never did she have to interrupt. I was crying, and so when I was reading, she said, I didn't hear that. Could you read it again? And she never dozed off. She, you know, because sometimes you hear in the halls with other people reading that their sponsor fell asleep. And I thought, how awful that would be, right? She didn't fall asleep. She was so attentive. And then I got in my car. I didn't have a cell phone back then. So I think I called my husband from her house and because he said, call, because it's probably X amount of time. And so strategically, and I arrived at the restaurant, and he had already got the booth. And my youngest one was 6 at the time. And she says, Mama, you look awful. Let's go to the ladies' room. And in her purse, she had a little lipstick. So I was able to, fix my hair and put a little lipstick on. And we went and we shared as a family because alcoholism is a family disease. And my oldest one said, so what do you do with your blue book now, Mom? I said, I don't know yet. I have to wait for the next set of instructions. But it was incredible. And my husband, he said, because we had the two cars, he said, why don't you just drive home alone? I'll take the kids. Like, who was this man? Those 14, 15 years before, I never recognized. So what happens with change is change begets change even within the family. And it continues, right? So on my ride home, we do a thorough, absolutely thorough fourth step, but a memory had, come back to me. And so I called my sponsor when I got home, and I said to her, something came up with my brother, my younger brother, And she gave me instructions on how to write it out. So I wrote it out, and then I called her back, and then I was ready to sit with God for an hour. And sitting with God for an hour was amazing, absolutely amazing, a wave of peace. You know, I read through the five first proposals, right, which are the first five steps, and I read through it, and I felt like I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that there was that authenticity that I thought I needed in order to get the master's degree, but really what I needed it was for Mary, right? And so it began. And my sponsor, we met the following week, and we read through steps 6 and 7. And so she began to help me with meditation. So we joined a small women's group called Iron Sharpens Iron. I don't know, maybe you've heard of it. And so we began to meet, and how do we sharpen one another? And how do we begin to look at our character defects? And at first I thought my character defects was just selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fearful. And that is a good beginning, right? But then we did and meditated on the St. Francis prayer, which had, you know, several 16 lines. So we meditated and emailed each other each line. We did a line per week. So, and that began to develop this accountability. And it happened to be wintertime. So my husband had torn his meniscus and had surgery, and he had come home, you know, and he was held up and he couldn't go to work, and he was on the couch, and he had brought home some pain pills, and which was never a big deal because drugs were never part of my story. So it was the winter where we had the most incredible snowstorm. So my driveway is like just like it's beautiful, but it's the longest thing I've ever seen in my life, right? And so the snowblower wasn't working that winter because my husband was busy doing other things. And so my son John and I went outside and began to shovel. So we're shoveling, and I come back in. I said, "My God, that is so heavy, that snow." And I said, my shoulders hurt. And so he says to me, "You know, I have those Percocets, and they really took all the pain away from my knee. Why don't you have one?" And so I said, "Huh, okay." So I popped a Percocet. My God, it's better than an aspirin. I mean, it was something I hadn't, I just couldn't remember experiencing such a glow, right? So 3 days later, another snowstorm. My son John and I are out there shoveling away. And I come back in, my shoulder. And I took another Percocet. A couple of days later, no snowstorm. But I took another Percocet. So in my St. Francis, you know, accountability email, there's a line about, have we kept something to ourselves? So the thought crossed my mind, gee, I haven't mentioned anything to anyone about, you know, taking these Percocets. So I said, I thought I would mention to the group that, you know, 5 days ago, 6 days ago, we had a snowstorm. And I just typed out the whole thing. Well, my email blew up. And the first thing my sponsor said was, whose name was on the bottle of the Percocet? And I said, Scott. And she said, yeah. And your name is? So kind, you know. Like, she didn't yell at me. She didn't do anything. She said, we must have missed something. So we got together, and I did some writing about not the first one, but the third one. Like, what was it? What happened with that alcoholic mind? What happened to that part of me that thought it was okay to get out of whatever pain? And there was a lot of hidden things that were going on. So I'm so very grateful that you know, my 6 and 7 included that experience, because who knows what might have happened had I not had that accountability in place. Like, God puts well, has put for me everything that I need to stay on this trajectory of wholeness and health and transparency, and how easily I was led to think that it was okay, you know. And I share that in that, in the, and I insert it in this part of the writing because it was my 6 and 7 that began to look at my character. And, you know, I've had other books along the way. And I took a sponsee through the process back in 2014. And she said, Mary, there's this new book out when we arrived at 6 and 7. And she said, it's called Drop the Rock. And she said, I really would like to do that with you. She said, you can do it in a group. And so I said, well, let's form a group. And so I went to, I had a group of women in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and we began to meet, and we began to read this book. And oh my God, so life-changing, you know, gave you practical suggestions about clearing, you know. So we cleaned out in reading our fifth step, and then I began to clear out in other areas of my life. And, you know, the metaphor of cleaning out your closet, cleaning out your house, cleaning out your mind, cleaning out your spirit began to take new shape. And I have done Drop the Rock with every sponsee after that. We form a group. So I've been in the book a lot. And foundationally, what I discovered is that there's a lot of connection with the 7 deadly sins of my faith tradition and the same kinds of words like pride and jealousy and lust and gluttony and anger and greed and all these things that had kind of like, they weren't glaring, but they were subtle and hidden. And God wanted to uproot these things. And they couldn't possibly be uprooted unless I had a person, a book, or both in my life to show me that there's always more, right? And so I decided that it was important that I find a spiritual director. And that spiritual director wanted to work on just 2 things. He said, Mary, pride is the foundational character defect or sin, right? And then the desired goal is humility. So that's what I worked on with him for years, you know? And the humility drill, which he would not allow me to speak to anyone for the first year, because I got the humility drill and I go, this would be great for my sponsees, right? And he said, absolutely not. You need to practice this drill for at least a year before you can even speak of it. And on this humility drill is a list of things that you are suggested. Everything's a suggestion. But because I'm a type A, I have to, you know, memorize it and then maintain it and live it, right, to the best of my ability. And I was so flawed in humility. The first thing was that you don't argue. You don't argue. Which was so hard because I had a husband who was a firstborn male. I'm the firstborn in my family. And I thought it was my job to correct him whenever he was wrong. And we fight till the end, you know. And there was always, but this, but that. So I had to go and not, I was able to come up with, well, that's an interesting point. So hard. The other, so there was a series of questions, or points that one was, you cannot speak of yourself unless asked. Do you know how difficult that is? Like you're in a conversation and someone says something and then you want to just add to it. Couldn't add to it. Unless the person said, what do you think? Or they asked you a question. So I'll give you a real quick. So I went to a reunion, elementary school girls, and found the best outfit. I got my hair colored and cut. I mean, I was ready to go. Had pictures of my kids. Saw them. We met. We had a barbecue. Everyone's talking. No one has asked me a question. No one. I mean, it's like 4.5 hours. And I'm listening, you know. But see, God's working on my character that George was talking about, my character. And I'm like, no one's asked me anything about myself. So in comes Eva, and Eva says, oh my God, Mary, how are you doing? Tell me everything. And she began to ask me, she goes, did you bring a picture of your kids? I said, yes. And I grabbed it, and I showed it to her, and the others are saying, how come you didn't show us? And I said, well, you didn't ask me. And they went, oh, okay. And then she began asking me questions. And it taught me the importance of learning how to listen, right? And how important it is to ask others questions. Didn't get that. You know, I would just dovetail on whatever you were telling me, you know? And then did I follow up on a question? Not always. But it had changed my character. And so I'm still a work in progress when it comes to humility. And my spiritual director said pride is something that we're going to be always working on. And then with the other character defects, you know, what I love about Drop the Rock is that he used the analogy of a mirror, right? So if you meet someone and they rub you the wrong way, your job is to look at what it is that rubs you the wrong way and then ask yourself, how is that within you, right? So I remember reading that. Next morning, I go downstairs into the kitchen, and my husband's never awake before I am, but he happened to be at the kitchen table. So I said, good morning, and he didn't look up. He didn't say good morning. It was dead silence. And I thought, how rude is he? He's ignoring me. I felt ignored. So then I remembered what I had read and dropped the rock. So I said, when do I ignore people? And I went into the other room and sat with God. And I was thinking, you know, I ignore people at the mall. You know how you go into the mall and the sales people say, hi, my name is Ellie. If you need anything, just let me know. I would ignore them. That was one thing that I began to. And I would ignore other people, you know, if I didn't want to talk to them for whatever reason. And so I began to have that imprint of how important it is to be aware of whoever God puts in your arena. So I went back in the kitchen, and my husband looked up, and he goes, hey, good morning. He didn't even hear me. And how often do we make assumptions? How often I make assumptions? And so God, again, is working on my character, you know, not to make assumptions that people are acting in a particular way because of something I might have done or, you know, that I caused something. So getting out of myself, you know, is so very interesting. And I'll end with, you know, I love the girl in the book that wanted to control her character defects. So she listed them, put them in a cup, and she would pick. And she would work on that character defect. And it didn't work, because it's not about us working on the character defect. It's God. And this is soul surgery, and he does the work. And he removes and puts in. And sometimes I'm just amazed at what he has removed and what seems to be replaced. And it's about surrender, and it's about acceptance and being willing to allow this relationship with God to come into play. Because sometimes I have said things and I am just shocked. And it was exactly what I was supposed to say. And I know that because weeks or months later, a person will come back and say, thank you for saying what you said to me. I didn't like it, but it was exactly what I needed. And thank you for your boldness. So I have changed my idea of what is, you know, my character defects and what God uses, because he's the creator of this new person. And he's taken a lot of away, and he's put some things in. And I don't take credit for any of it. And I'm just so very grateful that step 6 and 7 continues to grow. It doesn't end there. And then there's other things that I have read. And when you avail yourself to spiritual direction and taking direction and being available for correction, beautiful things begin to happen. And you have more people that enjoy your company instead of run away from you. And that's my experience. Thank you.